This is the interview featuring former governor of Minnesota, professional wrestler, member of the U.S. Special Forces, and actor Jesse Ventura. No introduction needed. Here's the combo with Jesse Ventura.
'13 will be forever defined as a year of political infighting, irrational inconsistency and lack of leadership in trying times by both major political parties and their equally inefficient and selfish cliques. Politicians today seem to have forgotten why they're in Washington. It isn't always that way. Every now and again, someone special gets elected, be it based on the frustration of voters that are sick of being jerked around or the sheer strength of personality and commitment to the cause. In November 1999, the Playboy interview featured one of those individuals. It was the outspoken, highly opinionated, and newly elected governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura. Governor Ventura had been in office for a year at the time of the Playboy interview and was doing something rarely seen in politics today. He was keeping his campaign promises. That included reforms to Minnesota's property tax, the state's first sales tax rebate, income tax cuts, and commuter rail projects. Ventura remains one of the most unique individuals in American politics today. A Navy SEAL, former mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, former governor of the state of Minnesota, a visiting fellow at Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government, an actor with credits in multiple blockbuster films that include Running Man and Predator, a television and radio show host. He was also, and in some ways, better known as professional wrestler Jesse the Body Ventura. A conspiracy theorist for sure, a guy who wore the colors of notorious motorcycle club the Mongols on his back and has been involved in numerous controversies, including the November 99 Playboy interview. Governor Ventura, do you remember the flack you took for this interview?
Oh, I remember it like yesterday. And the mistake that I made was this. I was completely honest in the interview, and I did it in the genre that Playboy readers would be the ones reading it, which wouldn't make it overly shocking to them, anything I would say. But the problem was I didn't realize they would take snippets or parts of those interviews and they would put them on the front page of the regular newspaper, which I always kind of laughed and thought that's equivalent to taking the photos in Playboy and sticking them on the front page of the daily newspapers. And, so that was really the trouble I got into. I stood by everything I said, but the problem was what I said, probably some of it wasn't politically correct, and you learn quickly when you hold public office that you no longer can speak just for yourself. You have to speak for the state, or you represent the state or the country, whatever it might be.
You said on NBC's Meet the Press, "I speak my mind. If it offends people, if it offends some people, well, there's not much I can do about that, but I'm going to be honest." I've read the interview numerous times, and I found you to be completely open, honest. It was really refreshing to hear a political figure speak that openly. Did the criticism you received from that, has that changed the way you approach the media?
Well, you know, you're a little more leery now of who you're talking to and in what genre it might be used in. You have to be careful of that, of what you say, when and how, because they could send it to, you know, it'd be like rattling off a string of swear words and then having them play that on the religious channel. You know,
and
that aspect you have to be. But I've never strayed away from telling the truth. In fact, I find it ironic today that the word truth, they've morphed it to have a bad meaning now. How can truth have a bad meaning? You know, they call these people truthers and this stuff. So now somehow the word truth is a bad word. And I can't believe they were able to accomplish that.
Truth has always been incredibly important to you. It appears it's always been more important to you to speak the truth than to make it something that's comfortable for everyone else to hear.
Well, sometimes the truth makes people uncomfortable, and sometimes the truth should make people uncomfortable, but it is what it is. One of the fun things I can relate to, when I ran for governor, I never used a prepared speech ever in my entire run for the governorship of Minnesota. People were astounded by that, but it really was simple. I've told it many times. I said, I go by a simple premise. If you tell the truth, you don't have to have a good memory.
That's true. And you also live by the golden rule. And one of the things that got you in trouble was, and I quote, "Organized religion is a sham and a crutch for weak-minded people who need strength in numbers. It tells people to go out and stick their noses in other people's business. I live by the golden rule. Treat others as you'd want them to treat you. The religious right wants to tell people how to live." You took heat for saying this. It sounds like a very rational statement. Did you expect the blowback from that?
No, because at that point, you know, it was kind of a surreal world for me anyway. I had won this unbelievable election that nobody said I could. And I was doing multitudes of interviews day in and day out. So I really didn't have time to, you know, do that because it was so overwhelming. But I live by what I said. Today, I've come out of the closet. Today, I openly tell people I'm an atheist. I make no bones about it. I felt great when President Obama did his one inaugural speech where a president finally acknowledged that we exist and we should be, you know, treated with respect, because Obama had made a thing talking about Christians, Muslims, and he went down the line of all the religions. And then at the end, he also said, and non-believers. This is the first time I think a president actually included us, people who don't believe that there necessarily is a supreme being. And that was nice to see. And I know that we've come a long way when you hear things like that.
Absolutely. Speaking of coming a long way, you also said the question was asked of you, what do you think of gays in the military? Your response was, who am I to tell someone they can or cannot serve their country? I couldn't care less if the guy next to me is gay as long as he gets the job done. And you know what I found so refreshing about this is you're not just a politician who's saying that, which at the time was not a popular statement to make, but you're a guy who was in the trenches. Navy SEAL. I mean, you were in the trenches. And if you don't mind, why should anyone else?
Well, to me, it's irrelevant. It's unless they change the name of the country to the hetero states of America, how can they tell a gay person they can't serve their country if they're a citizen of this great country? I mean, to me, it's that simple. It doesn't require anything more or less.
Did your friends from your military days have any response for you?
On that issue? No,
yes.
I've never heard anything negative about it ever, really, because I think anyone that has served knows that what you care about is that the person next to you, you can count on them and they can get the job done. Anything else is their own private business, and it has nothing to do with me, you know. In fact, I personally, I'll give you another good one. We're on the Playboy Network. I would have preferred more gays, because then I was single in the military, and when we went overseas, that would have meant more pickings for me. You know, yeah, the more gays there were, there'd be less competition when you got to Olongapo, you know, in the Philippines, when you took breaks from all the other fun things you did.
That's amazing. Who else is thinking that way?
I don't know.
That's great.
Well, that was one of the John Woodley, who used to do my communications for me when I was governor. He said, that's the unique thing about you, Governor. He said, you can look at a situation and see it in a way no one else can.
Which is great. Now, you didn't expect to win.
Yes, I did.
Did you?
Absolutely. I don't run to lose. I don't run to make statements. I run to win.
What made you?
Of course I ran to win.
What made you think you had any shot of winning?
Well, because I just felt that if I was allowed in the debates, which I was allowed to be in them, and I was able to portray what I believed that the leadership of Minnesota should receive, I just thought, having grown up and born and raised in Minnesota, I'm a Minnesotan, I kind of knew what it took. And I never ran not to think about winning. I don't run to lose. I run to win.
Nobody else took you seriously.
Well, they should have then, I guess. We were serious. All the people who ran, and here's things, you know, they don't talk much about my campaign because they don't want people to know about it, because for fear it could happen again. We had only one paid worker on my campaign, and that was Doug Friedline, my campaign manager, who left his private sector job. So we paid him a minimal amount so that he, you know, could at least pay his bills and things. Everybody else who worked on my campaign was a volunteer and wasn't paid. Imagine that. We only raised $300,000, and that was all in $50 and $100 donations from regular citizens. I actually made more money doing the job than I spent to get it. And I don't think anyone can say that in the last 50 years, maybe longer, in a major election. And we truly were a grassroots movement, and I targeted the people that didn't normally vote. They thought I was crazy because I spent a great deal of time on college campuses. But I knew in order to win this, I had to get the non-traditional voter to come out of hiding. And it happened because They predicted a 50% voter turnout. It was not a presidential, and I was polling 27%. Then it turned out to be 60, and I ended up with 37%. So that additional 10% they never counted on came out and put me over the top and elected me.
And then you did something unheard of. Then you had the gall to take office and actually do what you said you were going to do.
Well, I got into office, and the first thing I told my staff was, I said, tell lobbyists they're banned. I won't see them. They didn't elect me, and so for 4 years I never met once with a lobbyist, which allowed me, you know, to make my own decisions of what I wanted to pursue and the things I wanted to accomplish. Sometimes I feel bad that I didn't stay for another term, because I certainly could have been reelected, and my ultimate goal was to change Minnesota government from bicameral to unicameral, one house. Because at the state level, you don't need two houses. One house will suffice, and it's a much more efficient running government. Nebraska's the only state that has it. They've had it for nearly 100 years, and they have never had a special session due to the fact they couldn't reach a budget conclusion. You know, it does things like that. You can't put amendments on bills and let the full body votes to amend the bill. It doesn't come out from a committee that way. It's a much better way to run the state government, and I would have needed to stay at least 4 more years in which, because I couldn't even get them to do a vote on the floor to allow the people to even consider it.
You didn't get a chance to accomplish everything you wanted to accomplish. Why didn't you run again?
Well, for personal reasons, my wife suffered some health problems at the time, and I didn't want to go public with it. Today I do, because it's water over the dam a decade ago. But I didn't want to go public. It was no one's business, and I will always put my wife ahead of holding one of these jobs. These jobs, to me, are what they are. They're public service. And if you're not in a position to do public service, you don't do it. And since then, we've corrected my wife's problems, and everything's great. But I think that she doesn't particularly like politics, and it's very stressful for her. And I will always put her in front of holding any of these jobs. And so she was the major reason that I didn't seek re-election. Plus, I'll give you the funny reason. Would you like the other one?
Absolutely.
After spending 4 years with the Democrats and Republicans, you truly feel like you need a shower.
I don't doubt that at all.
Yeah, well, and I needed a shower. It was 4 years.
What are your thoughts on the political climate in America today?
I think it's I feel like a prophet, because I've been warning everybody over the last decade of what the results of this is all going to be, and it's coming true. It's pathetic in the fact that they would shut down our government over a political issue, and that means they're doing exactly what I accuse them. They put their parties ahead of the country, and they put their money donors ahead of the country. And so until we stop, the people need to realize you're not going to change the country by simply voting from a Republican to a Democrat or from a Democrat back to a Republican. The only way to change the country is to abolish these political parties and get rid of them. Turn them into political action committees they could still endorse. That way they got their constitutional rights. But take their names off the ballot. There's a great start. Why do they put political names on a ballot? Just put the candidate's name. Then it becomes imperative for us as voters to educate ourselves.
Couldn't agree more. And you know what? Apparently America agrees, too. The climate of American politics has reached an all-time low. And I don't know if you saw the recent Gallup poll. 18% of Americans are satisfied with the way the country is being run. 18%.
Down. That's pretty high.
Down from 32% before the shutdown.
Well, and I heard that Congress has a 10% approval rating.
Yeah, how is that acceptable?
Well, it's not. But the point here's where I'll counter and say, and we still reelect these people. I'm astounded. I don't have the answer for you.
Well,
how do they get reelected when 9 out of 10 people don't like them?
That's a great question. And I thought you made some amazing points recently. You were on the Howard Stern show. It sounded like a pretty serious conversation about a Ventura Stern ticket. How real is that?
Well, it possibly could be very real if Howard will do it. I'm trying to explain to people why I need Howard and why it's so important. It's to keep my integrity. with a person like Howard, number one, we don't have to come off the air because Sirius Radio isn't governed by the FCC, so we could use it as a place to save money and let the people know what we stand for. Second of all, Howard can raise money in $20 and $30 donations, which doesn't make me obligated to corporations and dirty money when I get elected, so therefore I don't have to meet with lobbyists again. Are you following why I now need Howard?
Or someone like him, absolutely.
Yeah, or someone like him, or to get him to make available his show,
yeah.
You know, and to raise the money for me, because to me that's the dirtiest part is the bribery, the money. And if I can stay clean of that and still have it to compete, of course you've got to be allowed in the debates or it's all for naught. But if those things could be met and I could raise the money, you know, in a manner like Howard could, if he simply went out to his listeners and said, we need $20 a person, no telling what he could raise. But it would be something like that that would keep my integrity intact, because I don't want to sell my integrity and run for president just to be another one of these characters that has sold his soul to rock and roll, for a lack of better term.
Yeah, well, Howard's a very private person. When he ran for governor of state in New York, he backed out right before it came the time that you have to – and you know this process. You have to divulge everything.
You do?
Well, that's what he said. You don't
why?
Have to. You don't have to divulge your income. Your
how? Why? Where does it say that? I thought that the only thing it said to run for president was to be 35 and be born in the country. That's all the Constitution says. Where does it say you have to divulge your personal wealth?
That's a good question. I guess I'm going to have to look that up.
You better. You know, I've heard that, and I'm going, where does it say you have to do that? The qualifications to be president are two things, according to the Constitution. You have to be 35 years of age minimum, and you have to be born in the United States.
Well, I guess, you know, officially versus unofficially, you know, Mitt Romney ran into a buzzsaw for not wanting to release.
Why? Only because the media said, what difference does it make what you're worth in money? I think it's far more important to know who's paid you off.
Well, I think that's the point.
In fact, here will be my swap. We'll release how much money we're worth if the opponents will wear NASCAR racing suits with all the patches of who owns them.
Oh, that would be great.
Fair enough swap.
That would be great.
So I've always said that too. They should require you to wear NASCAR racing suits so the voter can see who owns you.
The fire suit with NRA on the front.
Well, like Jimmy Johnson. His major thing is Lowe's.
Yeah.
Well, if you were Barack Obama, your major thing would be Goldman Sachs.
That's great.
And see, that way the voter will know, okay, we know who owns this guy. And that way they don't even have to talk about it. You just wear it as a patch.
I think you're onto something. So let me ask you this. What if Howard doesn't run with you? You said on his show that you would only run if Stern ran with you, but...
Well, I would need something like Howard. I find the money obscene when they spend a bill. Like my father said to me, I came home. Here's why. I came home from school one day when I was 16, and my old man was a World War II vet, and he only went to eighth grade. And he said to me one day, "All politicians are crooks." And I said, "Come on, Dad, how can you make that statement?" I said, "They all can't be crooks." He said, "Yes, they can. You want to know why?" I said, "Why?" And in his simplistic world, and he's completely correct, he said, "Because they spend $1 million for a job that only pays $100,000. Now, that's the truth. And in the private sector, no one would do that.
Well, but it's a simplistic way of looking at it. Because...
So what? You wouldn't do it.
Well, but when...
You would never spend more money than what you're going to make.
Unless the money's on the back end and you
exactly,
have...
Exactly, yeah. Which means you got to be dirty. Unless you're getting paid off.
Or that the experience is such that
one
makes...
of the reasons, you want to know the other reason I didn't seek another term as governor? I couldn't financially. I was making $120,000 a year as governor, right? But that included, I had to pay taxes, and they deducted my car mileage, and they deducted every meal that my family ate in the governor's residence. So when all of that was done... I was governor, I was clearing $60,000 a year. Unfortunately, my lifestyle requires that I make more than $60,000 a year.
How did you wind up at Harvard?
They approached me shortly after I got out of office and asked if I would like to come out there and teach. And they sent me all the thing about being a fellowship professor at the Kennedy School of Government. And they wanted to know how long I would like to do it. I discussed it with my wife, having never gone to college, really, and feeling like Rodney Dangerfield. We agreed I would teach as much as they'd let me. And so I went out there for an entire winter semester and enjoyed every second of it.
Is that what led you to want to write the book?
That? No, not at all. I wanted to write the book for my own selfish reasons. It's been more than a hobby to me since 1985 when wrestling changed and we started flying everywhere. I picked up every book I could and read on it because I figured educate yourself while you sit on these planes. Don't just sit on them and sleep. And so I wrote it because I wanted it officially on the record for whatever it's worth. 100 years from now, they're going to know that the 38th governor of Minnesota did not agree with the Warren Commission.
Well, and it was interesting because you haven't agreed with the Warren Commission for a long time. In the November 99 Playboy interview,
right,
you talked about this.
Well, I've been already studying it since 85. So I was already, 14 years into my reading and studying of the documents and the whole story of what went down that day. And so I already had a very strong opinion that I did not accept the Warren Commission. I haven't accepted it since probably 1995 or earlier.
On your Facebook page, you have the Zapruder film. I've never seen the film as clean and clear as you have it on your Facebook page. It's a pretty compelling view.
Yeah.
Why does it matter now?
It matters now because, and again, bear in mind the word they. It matters today because if they can get away with killing our president for 50 years now, what is it that they cannot do?
Don't you think it's a little
different? Follow me? If you can kill the president and not be caught, you can do anything.
Granted, but also, if that were to happen today, could you imagine how many different angles would be on YouTube now? Times are different.
Oh, certainly they are, but that isn't the point. It isn't the point, could they get away with it today? The point is our entire life and where we're at today is different because of what they did here. And you need to understand this because it'll lead you to where we're at today.
Okay, so speaking of where we are today, Snowden, the NSA, the U.S. government spying on international leaders. As you follow this, I mean, it's all related to what you're writing about. What are your thoughts on what's happening today?
Well, today they're out of control, and we've let them get out of control because, again, it's the quote I gave you. If they can kill our president and they can do a coup d'etat, which is what happened that day, what can't they do? Now you're getting examples of what can't they do. They've got us under surveillance. They send us to wars. They do all these things, and it's all because clearly we've allowed them to be in control of the government rather than us.
The only way to get rid of they or them is to make a difference. So back to you running for president. You said in the 99 interview that the way you ran for governor was to let everyone basically run out of steam. You came in 3 months ahead of the election. You hit them hard, you hit them fast, and you won. We're not even at midterm yet.
Well, see, this election would have to be handled a completely different way. Because if now on this election, I'm known now as people, when I say Howard Stern, now you'd have to take me serious, wouldn't you?
I would take you seriously just by the fact of what you did in Minnesota.
You would, but not everybody.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Mainstream media and how they've tried to marginalize me. You know, they've done a hell of a job trying to do that, but they have attempted to do it. Did you know this book this time? I can't get interviews on ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, or Fox.
Why?
I don't know.
Why do you think?
Either the content of the book or my threats of running.
Really? But don't you think?
You tell me. Why would they die for me? They get ratings points. Talk to Piers Morgan.
Yeah.
He don't like having me on, but he laughs and says you burst the ratings every time you're on. Why can't I get on Fox? Why can't I get on MSNBC? Why can't I get on CBS, NBC, or ABC? Because it's either me or the content of the book or a combination of both.
That's a great question. I'm going to have the Playboy Radio investigative team
there
look into
go.
This. That's a
have
great
question. Find out. I'd love to know and call me back.
We will do that.
So, I don't have a big staff. It's me.
Yeah,
no, my wife, you know?
I hear you.
She does the computer, and she does all that, and that's why she gets half.
That's funny.
Well, I don't have no problem. Whatever I make, she gets half because she does behind-the-scenes work and deserves it.
Well, we have a huge staff, but they're all topless and bunny ears.
Well, yours is almost as good as mine, then.
Right. So, if you, when you
remember
run,
remember this: I've had my staff with me for 38 years.
That's true. Longer than us, for sure. When you run,
I'm not saying I'm going to run. When I run, you know,
I said it.
Okay.
When you run, if you run,
yeah,
you would run against or with certain individuals, and I want your thoughts on a couple of people.
All right.
Hillary Clinton.
Well, you know, she's going to run and try to be the first woman, but my combat thing with her is, what are we, a monarchy? Are we Britain now? I mean, the only presidents we get are Clintons and Bushes. Those are the only people capable of running the country, are the hand-picked people by the two power brokers, the parties.
Will Benghazi stay with her through the election?
I don't know. I wouldn't run on it. It doesn't matter to me on Benghazi. We got more important things than Benghazi to talk about.
But don't you think, again, with the way when it comes to cover-ups, isn't Benghazi a great example of dropping the ball?
I don't know. I wouldn't want to comment on it because I've been so focused on the things I've been on, I don't know enough about it.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, I don't like to comment on things unless I see different sides to the story and I'm able to analyze it myself. And in the Benghazi case where those people were killed and it was overrun, I don't know the behind the scenes, who was actually doing it and who, you know, what went on. I'm not educated enough on that to where I'd make an opinion right now.
Your thoughts on Rand Paul?
If he's with the Tea Party, I don't like the Tea Party because the Koch brothers run it and they planned on it 10 years before it was even unveiled. So the people that think the Tea Party is some grassroots movement are sadly mistaken.
Ron Paul seem to be saying some things that make a lot of sense. But
oh, yeah. Ron Paul, I don't know Rand.
Okay.
I've never met him. Ron, I know well, and hey, I stand with Ron Paul on 90% of what he talks about, absolutely.
But he doesn't get taken seriously by the media.
That's because they marginalize him like they would me.
Why do you think that is with him?
Because they work with the two, because he's as popular in the Republican Party as the redheaded stepchild who shows up the day they read the will.
If it's popularity only, I mean,
get what I mean. They don't want him.
Why? Because of what he says.
Because of what he stands for. He's not the status quo. He's telling them to abide by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. He's telling them not to go to war. He's telling them all these things that they don't want to do.
Do you find it interesting, though? You know, they marginalize you for your colorful history.
Right.
With him, I mean, he's an economist. He makes a lot of sense, economically speaking.
Yep.
Yet they can still, as you said, marginalize the guy because he isn't the status quo. But it seems like the public doesn't want the status quo.
He'd come in a very close second in a lot of the primaries. They wouldn't even say his name. They'd talk about Rick Santorum, who got 2% of the vote and finished seventh.
What about Paul Ryan?
Paul Ryan, I just read on him. This guy's really pulling a snow job on people. he's as bad as they get.
In what sense?
In the sense of he's totally a power broker for the rich and wealthy.
So
he doesn't care what happens to the rest of America.
There's a very good chance that he's leading the Republican ticket in 2016.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me at all, because I saw something very unique. If you look at the Republican power right now, they're the Confederacy.
And what would that make the Tea Party?
Well, I don't know part of it, but they're the Confederacy. Take a look at their power, where it's all at.
Yeah, but they can't seem to agree on anything.
Well, maybe so, but they might by the time the next election comes around.
Or one might say by the time the next election comes around, it's been put in so many different pieces that they're not one group anymore.
Oh, well, maybe so. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. The shutdown. Senator Ted Cruz.
Well, the whole thing was pathetic. It shows that they care more about themselves and their party than they do the country. Because they made the country vulnerable because of that shutdown. They embarrassed the world. We got embarrassed in front of the world. And that's their job, is to, they take an oath to enforce the law. Obamacare is now the law. So anybody that opposed that was truly breaking the law. Whether you like the law or don't like, it's irrelevant. It's still the law. It's the law of the land. It passed the Congress. The president signed it. It passed the Supreme Court muster. So therefore, if you want to change it, do it the proper way. Go in and pass another bill, pass it, and let it supersede this thing. But for them to shut down the government because they lost on a particular political issue is despicable. And in fact, I'll go this far. They should all be fired if you behave that way in the private sector. Let me give it to you like Playboy would understand it. You got an issue that's due out October 15th. Everybody knows the deadline on when the issue has to be printed and on the newsstands. Yet, because of your inability and inept as workers, you fail to meet that deadline, and the issue doesn't get out when it's supposed to. It takes 2 to 3 weeks later. Wouldn't everybody be fired?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely.
And they should all be fired because they knew the deadline was coming up. They knew it well in advance, months, years in advance, and yet they weren't prepared. They didn't finish their jobs, and they did their jobs as bad as anybody who would deserve to be fired immediately on the spot.
Okay, so we know it's going to happen again in February. Who's going to be the one to what's the issue going to be to light it up again in February?
I don't know. Talk to them.
Yeah, but
who knows what they'll dream up this time? We'll be doing. They kick the can down the road. Well, just like when they raised the debt ceiling. Okay, they vote and raise the debt ceiling, right? You know what the first thing they did? They sent billions of dollars of foreign aid to Pakistan. Now, that means it's our money. Pakistan's getting to spend it, and we have to pay for it in our debt. We got the bill. Now, why are we sending foreign aid to anyone? We're broke. We're up to our eyeballs in debt. Our grandchildren, when a kid's born today, the minute he takes his first breath of air, he's $50,000 in debt.
So you said in the 99 interview, speaking of Obamacare, you said, I endorse all welfare. There should be a safety net, but it should not be a lifestyle. And my question to you is, have we gotten to the point yet in your mind where not all welfare is appropriate?
Certainly there could be bad programs. Of course there can. But I'll tell you it's not appropriate corporate welfare. Corporate welfare costs 100 times more than social welfare. I've seen the charts. Let's get rid of corporate welfare. Instead of giving tax breaks to corporations to where they don't, where GE doesn't have to pay taxes. I mean, come on. You're talking billions of dollars here where social welfare is merely thousands. There's a big difference between billions and thousands.
Let's cut to 2 years from now, 2.5 years from now. Jesse Ventura, Governor Jesse Ventura runs for president, wins it on the Ventura Stern ticket.
Okay.
And you have the opportunity now to start the wheels turning, to change these things. Give me the overview. How do you address the IRS? How do you address corporate welfare? How do you address...
You switch to a national sales tax like my petition has out there. I have that petition you need to have in print that I want people to sign. I forget what the thing is on the internet. Something changed, something or other.
You know what? Let me tell you, Governor. It's www.
There, you know it.
.change.org/Jesse Ventura.
Okay. First thing you do, you change from the income tax to a national sales tax. That way, you don't need the IRS anymore because no one will get audited anymore. All taxes would be paid from business to government, which they already do. Now, what do you do with the IRS? You reverse their role. Rather than watching us citizens, you make them watch the businesses and the government to ensure they're spending our money correctly.
How do you do that?
Pretty neat idea, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
No, you would never, with a national sales tax, you would get your money first. It would make you number one. You'd get the gross on your check, and you would determine what you wanted to pay taxes on by what you spent your money on. If you didn't want to pay taxes this week, don't buy nothing. And it makes you number one. Right now, the government's number one because they get your money first. You get it second. Well, that needs to be reversed. The government deserves to get it second, not you.
The issue of welfare?
What do you mean?
How do you address that? There's overruns, there's graft, there's...
Oh, well, if you, as far as on this national sales tax, you can determine what on spending and give everyone a credit card. And if you're poverty, you could say have your $15,000, $20,000 you spend be free of charge. You wouldn't have to pay tax on it.
As the governor of Minnesota, how did you address public programs?
I looked at them all individually and tried to analyze whether they're working or not.
Did you cut any?
I don't remember. It's over a decade ago. I can't remember. And remember that as a governor, you can't do any of that. All money spending comes from the Congress or the legislature. But as governor, you put forth a budget, but they are the ones that okay it, and they okay the spending. As governor or president, you can't do it on your own.
Well, no.
It requires them.
No, but surely you have to have some input on it. What is your take on Obamacare, not counting the technological role?
My take is not on Obamacare. My take is on health care in general, and I feel this way.
Okay.
A country like ours, if you get sick, you should be able to go to the doctor. Now it's up to us to figure out how you achieve that. Is Obamacare the right way to do it? I don't know. But certainly we need to do it, and we need to then amend it and fix it and get it to where it's the right way. Every other country does it, and let's look at the politicians for a moment. These illustrious congressmen and senators, they get four choices of health care plans. They get a choice of four different plans they can choose from. They're trying to deny us one. They're the biggest hypocrites going. What is theirs? Theirs is government-run health care, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Now, let's look at isn't veterans government-run health care?
It is.
So if it's good enough for a veteran, shouldn't it be good enough for all of us?
Fair enough. I'll take it.
Wait, but it doesn't end there. I'm a veteran, but guess what? I can't get it.
Why is that?
Because I make too much money.
Ah.
Now, isn't that makes me a lesser veteran because I'm successful? Because I came out of the military and was successful, I can't get a thing from the vet's hospital, even though I'm a vet. Neither can my best friend, who just retired and was a blue-collar worker his whole life. He was denied and told, come back when your finances change. In other words, if you're broke, we'll take you. You can have the benefits of being a veteran. But as long as you're a veteran that got a job and worked, sorry.
Do you think that's a reason why we have more expats now than ever before?
No.
No?
Yeah, we have them because we're constantly at war.
You live, what, half the year in Mexico?
About 4.5 months.
Why and when?
Because I like getting away and I like the lifestyle and I've been doing it for 8 years.
Do you get better medical care in Mexico than you do here?
I don't know. I ain't been sick.
You haven't gone to a doctor in Mexico?
Yeah, once or twice.
And
but over nothing major.
And the experience, is it the same?
Yeah, I used to have get a blood test. The only thing that made it different, when they used to have to check my blood, I don't have to have them do that anymore. Up here in the States, they would take a needle, they would rub my arm with alcohol, they'd draw the blood, and then they'd take it to a lab, and they'd get the results. It would cost $150. When I had it done in Mexico, they did the same thing. They took a needle out of paper, they rubbed my arm with alcohol, they drew blood, and they took it back in the lab, and it only cost $15. I'm trying to figure out why it costs 10 times more up here. Could it be because we have to pay for all those pharmaceutical ads on TV?
They're good ads.
Well, they're ridiculous ads.
They are.
Because shouldn't the doctor give you the drug, not you tell the doctor what you want? If you're telling the doctor what you need, then the doctor's a dealer.
Our forefathers. Sorry, I'm changing gears on you.
All right, but didn't you like that answer?
I love that answer.
There you go.
Governor Ventura, I love all your answers. seriously, I'll tell you, I wish all of our political leaders displayed leadership first and foremost. I wish they displayed honesty because I think as a leader, leadership comes first. Honesty, you can't always be honest. Can you as a politician?
I don't know. That's the difficult part I see in being the president because when people tell me to run for president, I don't think I'm qualified, and I'll tell you why. I'm 35 and I'm born here. But I think the president has to be able to get on TV and lie. And I'm not sure I'm capable of being qualified to do that.
So listen, what if you have to? Let me ask you this.
I don't know. That's the problem. That may be why I won't run. Because
didn't you?
I'm incapable of getting on TV and lying to everybody.
As governor of Minnesota, didn't you? Let's take patently lying out of the equation for a second.
All right.
Didn't you ever have to get in front of your constituents and omit something or didn't you ever have to do that?
Well, omitting something's not lying. That's simply ignoring it.
Omitting something that is germane to the conversation, or not saying something that is completely truthful because you can't, you shouldn't.
I tried not to. But, I mean, I don't know if I did or not, but I can sit and tell you I certainly did not overtly say, let's omit this. I don't want anyone to know about this.
Okay.
I don't think I ever did that, to my knowledge.
Well, something you did say in the Playboy interview, you said our forefathers put it in there, meaning the Second Amendment, so the general citizenry has the ability to combat an oppressive government.
Right.
It's not there to make sure I can go hunting on the weekends. That's not really hunting, which, by the way, that second part of the comment I think is hilarious. But the point is the Second Amendment, and it goes back to the book and the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Do you think we have too many guns on the street? Has the NRA gone too far?
No. I that doesn't make me pro everyone having a gun, but the Second Amendment is what it is. It's there to protect us against oppressive government and give us the right to private gun ownership. And how many guns you want to own, it doesn't limit you. It doesn't say, well, one gun per house or, you know, a half a gun on the block and half for the other block. It means that in the privacy of your own home in America, you're legally entitled to own firearms.
At the time of the interview, Columbine had taken place.
Sure.
And since then, we've had so many more school shootings.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to guns. And I bring it up.
No, it don't.
Okay.
No, it don't. Because if they don't have guns, they'll find another way. What it comes down to is not protecting correctly. I told how to protect the schools over a decade ago, and no one listens, of course.
Banks are guarded by armed guards to make sure our money isn't touched, stolen, or misused. We put our children in schools and protect them with nothing.
Exactly.
Okay. Your words.
No, my way is simple. You hire a janitor. You got hundreds of thousands of qualified military and police personnel sitting out there. You hire them like a janitor. They do all the work as a janitor, but they wear two hats. They also carry an ankle holster and have a weapon inside the school. Kids don't need to see it. He's Bob the janitor. The only person that needs to know is the principal. But at least then you've got some type of response there when some psychotic maniac comes in and decides to blow away all the kids who are helpless and have nothing there to protect them for at least 15 to 20 minutes to a half an hour.
And you don't think that having fewer guns on the street is also something that could help that?
I had a safe full of guns in my house. And never have I come home and heard them misbehaving. Never have I come in the house and had to go down and discipline my weapons for shooting. There's something called a human element that has to be part of the equation.
Fair.
You know, and to blame it, okay, take a look at the nut that went in the theater in Colorado, right?
Yeah.
That went into the Batman. Did you know he passed by three other theaters till he got to the one that had the big sign that said no guns allowed? Now, why did he pick that one? Why did he pass by three other theaters that didn't have that sign in the window, but he went to the one that had it?
There are other countries that limit firearms that have far...
Yeah, that's true, but let me tell you another little statistic you need to know.
Okay.
In the last century or so, there's been at least six major genocides committed. Everywhere the major genocides are committed by governments, mass murders of people have been in countries where strict gun control is practiced.
And your rationale for that is because there was no response.
There's no way for the people to defend themselves. Well, let me give you another example. I'll give you on-the-ground examples. I was in the Philippines physically the day Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law, right, and became a dictator. The first thing he did, he gave the people of the Philippines like 2 weeks to turn in all their guns or it was the death penalty. I ask you, why would a dictator make that his number one priority? You disarm the public so you can rule over them, and come on.
So
you don't need me to give you that answer. You're not that dumb. Why do you think the dictator would disarm the public?
No, listen. By the way, it's not. I'm not pro or con. I'm asking the questions because, first of all,
and I'm just firing back at you in my typical Jesse fashion.
No,
ask me a question that you know damn well what the answer is, and you don't need to ask it.
I do, but I love the way you answer it.
You know. Come on.
I love the way you answered, and I also want to take it back to the book because
sure.
the question is now, theoretically, if there are fewer guns with technology we have now, ballistics should tell us more. There's a lot of things that, you know, with your book, why wasn't there more information that seems like there should have been?
Because it's been destroyed. It hasn't been released. It was never investigated in the first place. You got to understand, this investigation wasn't an investigation. They already had their conclusion, and all they were doing was gathering what evidence they could get that pointed to that conclusion. You went to college, didn't you?
I did.
Okay, in college, when you do something to learn, do you have the answer before you do it? No. You allow the evidence to lead you to the answer. They didn't do that. They already had their conclusion, and they only took evidence that led to that conclusion, which makes it a completely fraudulent.
In your book, you give 63 reasons, all of which are compelling. Do you think in your lifetime you'll ever find out? Do you think you'll ever know exactly what happened?
You mean, will they ever admit it? No.
Whether they admit it or someone has more information, you know.
Maybe. It could happen, maybe. I'd say more likely in my son's lifetime. He would stand a better chance. But they will never admit it. No one's ever going to come out from mainstream media or the government and say, look, Lee Harvey Oswald didn't do it. That's not going to happen. They will never admit to that because then they have to admit that they bamboozled us for over 50 years and then they'd lose what little credibility they could ever have. They have to maintain this so that they can attempt to keep any sort of credibility.
If, in fact, it was a conspiracy.
It was.
Okay. Let's say it was. Aren't you...
Do you believe Oswald by himself did this? Never spoke to a soul, just on his own?
I'm thinking because I've spent time in Dallas. I've toured the book depository. I've seen the window. I've seen the angle. I've seen the grassy knoll. I've seen, you know, what Dallas looked like in those days, and I've seen it, you know, how it's changed now. I don't know. It could go either way. For me, it could go either way.
Oh, not even a close.
It really,
how did
listen.
Shoot through the big tree.
You, huh?
How does he shoot through the big tree?
There was a fence there at the time.
No, the big tree.
There was, yeah, where
the tree that blocks the window.
Well, it was a smaller tree then.
No,
it wasn't. It was a long time ago.
No. I asked the curator, Matt, when I was there 10 years ago, I said, well, 40 years, clearly that tree's much larger than it was then. He said, no, this is a national monument. They keep it trimmed at roughly the same height.
Okay. Wait a minute.
Shoots through that.
Yeah, but trees grow rings. Trees get thicker. It's not about the height of it, per se. It's about the size of it in total. And you know what? Great point. I'm not going to even – look, a tree's there. I'll stipulate to that, and I'm not saying it didn't happen. What I'm saying is there are so many different factors, and you have to factor in so many. What two things in the book of the 63 reasons you give? What two for you just nail it?
Well, the fact that there's so many, let's see, which one would I like to pick out to say that?
Give me the two that you think are the
Katzenberg memo, and that's not even one of the 63. That's where acting Attorney General Nicholas Katzenbach Monday morning sends the memo to Lyndon Johnson describing how they got to handle the whole situation. They haven't investigated anything yet, but Oswald did it. He had no compatriots. We have to convince the public he would have been convicted at a trial. And then at the end of the memo, he said, we need to stop any undue speculation or any unwanted congressional inquiries. Well, see, there's two conspiracies that took place, the conspiracy to kill him and the conspiracy to cover it up. And the Katzenbach memo, I mean, that's not a smoking gun, it's a smoking cannon. It ends with, we need something to head off public speculation or congressional hearings of the wrong sort. What is a congressional hearing of the wrong sort?
One could say. That's,
what could one say on that?
One could say that is just an incredibly poorly worded memo. Not saying it's not true. I'm just saying one could argue that this guy should not have written that memo. But at the same time,
he shouldn't have written it because it's now a public document and we have it and it proves what they did. That's why you shouldn't have written it.
Okay, so
it ain't my memo, it's his.
And by the way,
and then how about Richard Nixon? Richard, you know, they always say somebody would have talked. Well, Richard Nixon's right on the Watergate tapes, we show you that. Nixon stating the Warren Commission's the biggest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people.
I would encourage everyone listening to go out and get the book, because whether you believe it or not, whether you can be swayed or not, it's a great read. You make some very compelling points. And you know what? It's a great history lesson, too.
Well, I just feel strongly Lee Oswald has daughters who are probably 50 years old today. I don't know how old they'd actually be. And they deserve to know that their father's not this villain that these bad people have made him out to be. And I feel strongly about that.
I want to steer everyone towards Governor Ventura's petition on civil liberties, www.change.org/Jesse Ventura, and also to your Facebook page, facebook.com/official Jesse Ventura. Governor, thank you for taking the time to chat.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having a great civil discussion. It was fun as heck. I enjoyed it. We'll do it again sometime.